Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. One word, one syllable, three letters, the key for now to this economy. How much it's going to cost. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Wednesday today, the 19th of January. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We begin today with three letters, a constant of economics, and also a caveat. The letters are the same three we ended with yesterday, W, T, and I. The U.S. benchmark crude oil, that was the one word in the open there, O-I-L, oil, right? West Texas Intermediate, WTI, up another percent and a half today, $87 a barrel. The global benchmark Brent crude is bumping on 90 bucks. The constant of economics, supply-demand, of course. Demand for oil, we got plenty of. Supply, we do not. And finally, the caveat is that you live by reporting daily oil price changes. You kind of suffer by it, too. But as Marketplace's Andy Euler reports to get us going on this Wednesday, as we inch toward $100 a barrel crude, the economic impact is very, very real.
Unlike a lot of stuff in this economy, we can break the price of oil down to the basics.
It is ultimately about supply and demand.
That's Mark Finley. He's a fellow at Rice University's Baker Institute.
The market is very tight now. Hopefully, at least from a consumer perspective, however, help may be on the way.
Help in the form of countries like Saudi Arabia bringing more oil back onto the market, which has been lagging.
Even OPEC countries have found that it's more difficult than they anticipated to reduce production and then just, boom, start it back up.
Robert Kaufman teaches in the Earth and Environment School at Boston University. He says producers in the U.S. could also help with supply if they're willing. Many have been reluctant to do so because they're skeptical these prices are going to stick around. Also because environmental commitments from investors supporting a transition to cleaner energy. But Kaufman doesn't really buy that last part.
I don't think what you're seeing now has anything really to do with, quote, the transition.
He thinks what we're seeing in the oil market right now is about COVID. Supply couldn't shut down fast enough at the start of the pandemic and now can't keep up with reemerging demand. Now, policymakers can also try to dampen oil demand, but Sarah Vakshery, president of SVB Energy, says that's the scarier part of the equation.
So if Biden's administration and U.S. Federal Reserve decides to control inflation, if they hit the brake very fast, then we're going to have a severe economic slowdown.
Instead, Robert Johnston at the Columbia University Center for Global Energy Policy says policymakers should be focusing on incentivizing a demand shift.
If overall energy demand is down because of recession and high prices, that's sort of one thing. If the economy is growing and people are switching to alternative fuels and technologies, that's kind of another.
He says the difficulty for the Biden administration is that it wants to appear focused on climate change, but also wants to secure oil and gas supplies to keep prices low at the pump. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
On Wall Street on this Wednesday, the word of the day is correction, which is where the NASDAQ is, down 10% from its most recent high. But you know, as well, somebody, I guess, mentioned yesterday, this is what is supposed to be happening. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Regular listeners of this program know that we talk to business owners, big and small, all the time. And last year, we spent a lot of time with micro business owners, just a couple of employees, less than a handful, certainly, if that, to see how they were doing after a full year of a pandemic economy. So now, as we head toward the end of full year number two of this pandemic economy, we are calling them back up. Ashley Ordonez owns a beauty bar out in Denver, Colorado. It's called The Bear Bar. Ashley, welcome back to the program. Good to have you.
Thank you for having me.
So we talked last March, so, you know, 10 or so months ago. It was a little tricky for you, I think we have to be honest. How has it been in the days since?
I would say that it's still a little bit of a roller coaster. I think it was like really evident we weren't getting much help from PPP or EIDL loans. So we were facing closure in May. That was like my timeline of when my cash reserves were running out. Mm-hmm. So I had a real fear that May would be my deadline, but we had a lot of amazing people reach out and help us get to May. And then once we got to May, our busy season kind of started and got us through till now. But it was kind of a roller coaster, but we made it through.
I don't want to start off on a down note, but are you confident you're going to make it through to the next busy season, which, you know, May, June, and summertime?
Yeah. I was at a point around November where I had to look at avenues of possibly selling the business. The second that the Omicron variant made news, it felt like we were in 2020, mm-hmm. first hearing about the pandemic again. We lost 30% of our clientele. People were kind of afraid to come back out again. So I tried to like get on the ball of like, okay, what can I do to grow my business and keep us open? Because slow season is just terrifying right now for the beauty industry because we're so client driven, right? Yeah. But I pushed through and decided to like stop trying to hire people because it was so hard to find people that were wanting to really work, yeah. and start renting out the rooms that I had so that I could make my rent.
Are you paying yourself a salary, by the way?
No, I haven't been able to pay myself in over a year.
That's not sustainable. I mean, yes, you own the business, but if you're not bringing home a paycheck.
It's kind of crazy. It's put some strain on the home life a little bit. But you just have to really concentrate on why you started. And I think my passion for my clients and what I'm doing here outweighs the stress of that.
When you stop to think about the next year or so, for all your passion and for all your determination, this is kind of not in your hands, right? I mean, it's up to the virus and it's up to how people are feeling. What else do you suppose you could do to keep this business afloat?
I've kind of exhausted some growth. My brain is tired from adapting so much. You know, we started out as just a waxing studio, and then I brought on facials to try to generate more business. And then I tried to bring on tanning, like spray tanning, to generate more business. And then I made my waiting room a boutique to generate e-commerce options. And now my brain is fried. I have nothing else but to like change this to booth renting, you know? Yeah. I do feel like I've come to a point of exhaustion of what this business can really change into much more. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes total sense. And it's you're working hard and that comes through, and it makes me, I'm amazed that you're still going. When we talked a year ago, you hadn't had, as you mentioned at the beginning, you hadn't had a lot of luck with PPP and some of the other programs. And I asked you if you thought you had been sort of forgotten about by the system. And I want to ask you the same question this time, because all that help from the government has run out and there ain't mm-hmm. no more coming. And all you have now are the people around you. But I guess the question is, do you still feel, as a micro business in this economy, do you still feel kind of forgotten?
Absolutely. I don't even think they took a double look at me. I think a lot of small businesses felt forgotten, not just mine. And I feel like it was really hard watching over and over again these large businesses get this PPP that they didn't even need, that they had cash reserves for. So a part of me feels a bit bitter and forgotten. And then the other part of me feels like at some point you have to stop feeling sorry for yourself and just hustle. So I think that instead of focusing so much on being forgotten, my goal is to just focus on doing right by my clients so that they want to come back.
Ashley Ordonez, she's in Denver. Her business that she has been running by force of will, it sounds like, is called the Bear Bar. Ashley, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time, and good luck to you. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Kai.
Hey, remember tariffs from back in the Trump administration? Steel and aluminum, most famously, but also tariffs on a whole slew of other items, on a whole slew of our allies and our non-allies as well. President Biden lifted a lot of those import taxes that had been levied on the European Union, which is perhaps one reason why a lot of Brits are maybe rethinking Brexit, putting the UK outside the European Union and its trade advantages, as it does. In a joint statement today, the United States and the UK said they are going to hold a fresh set of talks on tariffs, no timing specified. And as Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports now from a foundry in Chesterfield, up in the north of England, British steelmakers, they've about had it.
Business is still buoyant at United Castbars. The boss, James Brand, says the foundry's going at full blast.
We've got 2 8-ton melting furnaces, which are taking steel scrap and pig iron, and we're melting it down to liquid at 1400, 1450 degrees Celsius.
But the foundry now faces a headwind in its transatlantic trade, a major disadvantage. The US has lifted its tariff on steel exports from the EU, but it hasn't done the same for the Brits.
The UK is still saddled with the 25% duty, and since the agreement was put in place with Europe, there's going to be a certain amount of material now that can go from Europe into the US duty-free.
Making it 25% cheaper than the British product. Brand's company won't suffer overall. It has a subsidiary in the EU and is now planning to supply its American customers from that foundry. But this is a setback for the UK side of the business.
It's a few hundred tons of material that won't be made here in this foundry now. It'll be made at our sister company across in northern Spain. There is a loss of that turnover and those direct volume of sales from the UK factory.
The fact that the US tariff has not been lifted from the Brits, says Chris Glistra of the UK Steel Trade Association, compounds a major problem for the British industry, since the US is its second largest export market.
The tariff has been hugely damaging for UK steelmakers. Exports have halved compared to 2017.
The Brits have been pleading unsuccessfully for the tariff to be lifted since Biden took over the presidency. It was especially galling for the UK, therefore, when Biden obliged the EU 2 months ago and struck a deal with the head of the bloc's executive arm, Ursula von der Leyen.
Mr. President, you and I, we have today agreed to suspend the tariffs on steel and aluminium.
Just why the US has favoured the EU and snubbed the Brits isn't hard to fathom, says Peter Holmes of the UK Trade Observatory.
The EU has just got a lot more clout and goodwill in the United States. So the United States is not in a particular mood to do favours for the British government.
Far from it, he says, the deeply pro-Irish Biden has sided with the EU in a post-Brexit spat with the UK over the Irish border. And so the White House isn't going to give up an important bargaining chip.
If it removes the tariffs, then it's lost a stick to beat the UK with.
Brexiteers are fuming. John Longworth, a former member of the European Parliament for the Brexit Party.
It's almost as the United States has taken the decision to punish one of its greatest allies.
He says the Irish border issue is irrelevant to the question of US-UK trade, and he accuses the US of meddling in the UK's democratic decision to leave the European Union.
It's a very strange situation that we have the United States preaching about democracy, and yet they're actually undermining and ignoring the democratic will of the people of the United Kingdom.
Foundry boss James Brand doesn't want to get into the row about Brexit. For the US, he has a simple message.
Please receive us at the table and listen favourably to what we've got to say. Let's get us all onto the same level playing field.
If the US tariffs are not lifted fairly soon, he says, more British steel production may shift to continental Europe and never come back to the UK. In Chesterfield, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Coming up.
Hey, this is a cool building. Who wants to help me open up a restaurant?
Yeah, I'm in. Sounds like a good way to start a business. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's down 339 today, 0.9%, 35,028. The NASDAQ off 166, that is 1.1%, 14,340 there. The S&P 500 down 44, about 0.9%, 45.32 at the close. Heard from Stephen Beard about British steelmakers and those tariffs. Let's look at some American steel stocks, shall we? U.S. Steel down 5.9% today. Steel Dynamics cut off about 1.5%. The rollout of bank earnings continues. Morgan Stanley had a mixed fourth quarter results. Shares gained 1.8% today. Procter & Gamble ended the last quarter and 2021 by exceeding estimates. Sales totaled $21 billion at the end of December. Procter & Gamble lathered up 3.3% today. They also said prices are going up. So there's that. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. From the Census Bureau this morning came news of real estate, homes specifically, and us building more of them. Home building in December was at a nine-month high. No mean feat, really, seeing as how December is not usually the most construction-friendly weather in a lot of this country. Now, paying for a home, new or used, that's a whole other question, and it is getting more expensive. Mortgage rates are back up to where they were in the before times as the Fed makes noises about raising interest rates. And would-be buyers are getting the message mortgage applications are up even as those mortgage rates rise. Marketplace's Amanda Petra has that one.
Back in September, Dustin and Erica Goldman found a home they liked in Brooklyn. Good neighborhood, enough room for their home office and toddler. So they put in an offer. But it took forever to close, and their low mortgage rate was at risk of expiring.
The day that we got word that they had extended it was the day that the Fed met and said they're going to definitely increase rates in the new year. Like, oh, phew.
His wife, Erica Goldman, says they moved into their three-bedroom unit on Friday after closing just 4 days earlier.
And we're just in love with it. And there's so much unpacking to do.
Sometimes when interest rates tick up, buyers back off, hoping rates will fall again and they'll get a better deal. But some brokers say it's a different story now.
Recently, the rates have been steady going up for the past 12 days, if you look at it.
Tiffany Bogarty is a mortgage broker in Florida. She says some buyers are telling her they want to cinch down loans before rates rise further. David Waller needed to find a house quickly after moving his family of five to Mandeville, Louisiana.
We wanted to get it closed as quickly as possible.
He says that'll happen at the end of the month.
We were thinking that rates could start going back up.
But for existing homeowners who want to refinance their mortgages, it's a different calculation right now.
The rate hike has affected a lot of deals because it was so extreme.
Eric Bergeron, a loan officer in California, has a lot of clients who want to refinance a 30-year loan.
You know, I'm giving them a quote, 6 weeks ago at 2.7. Now they're ready to move forward, obviously. You know, now it's 3.3.
They might back out of the refinance, Bergeron says. For those clients who already have a home, the stakes are lower than for those trying to buy one for the first time. I'm Amanda Petcher from Marketplace.
Coming soon to a corporate annual report near you, disclosures of greenhouse gas emissions. The Securities and Exchange Commission is drafting the rules that publicly traded companies are going to have to follow as they begin making those disclosures. It's part of the Biden administration's climate change plan. Question is, though, as Marketplace's Lily Jamali reports, how much is actually going to have to be disclosed?
Imagine for a moment if publicly traded companies could disclose their financials however they wanted.
And if one company filed a balance sheet, another company filed an income statement, we wouldn't be able to compare them. Well, that's where we are today on climate issues.
That's Stephen Rothstein with investor advisor nonprofit Ceres. The Securities and Exchange Commission will be setting some standards with its greenhouse gas emission rules. The tricky part is whether companies should have to account for just their own emissions or also emissions by their suppliers and suppliers of suppliers.
Which is, in many industries, 60, 80, 90% of the total emissions.
But forcing companies to pin those numbers down wouldn't be fair, says Tom Quadman at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
Companies are being asked to forecast information
that may or may not be within their control, and they could be sued as a result of those disclosures.
And those disclosures could end up being quite complex. Take the retail industry, for example. HSBC commercial banker Eric Fish says historically, retailers may have known the wholesalers they dealt with, but a whole lot goes into a piece of clothing before that.
So if you think of any particular garment, the zipper, the pull, the buttons, and each embellishment in each different piece of material, the insulation, they're all coming from different vendors. And then those vendors are getting components of it from others.
Fish says that's starting to change because consumers have been asking companies for more environmental transparency. But there's a big difference between that and the SEC requiring it. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
Well, it was a whole lot of things, but among them is that it apparently was the time to start a new business. The Census Bureau updated us on new business applications last week. And in 2021, there were almost 5.5 million of them, a million more than the now demolished record, which was set, oh look, in 2020. So despite all the product shortages and raising prices and, oh yeah, a global pandemic, what was it like to start something new last year? Here's today's installment of our series, My Economy.
My name's Aaron Detroit Vesey. I own Detroit Vesey's, and we're in the Arts District downtown in Los Angeles, California. It's a queer-centered cycling cafe, and we serve kind of Midwestern diner food. We've been open since November 28th. It was kind of a magic trick, so I made a Facebook post that I make yearly of, hey, this is a cool building, who wants to help me open up a restaurant? And for whatever reason, this last post kind of clicked with people a lot more. And a good friend of mine stepped forward and offered to be a business partner with me in making it happen. A lot of the cycling spaces on this side of town don't have indoor bike parking. So we have a bike vending machine indoors so people can buy equipment and stuff without having to wait in line while people are ordering food. And it then also makes it accessible to customers who aren't on the bike that just want to come in and grab food and don't care about bikes and it's not their thing. It makes it a nice cross-section for everybody to come in, whether they're on the bike or not. COVID has definitely impacted the business. I think it's more so in starting during the holidays, which is already challenging for most businesses to start, and then add a COVID spike on top of that and making it hard for people to leave their homes and go out and discover new things. So I think that's been the challenge. Dealing with like permitting and the city and all of that and kind of navigating those things. I have less experience in that area, so it was definitely a huge learning curve. We're in the process of working towards a liquor license for the space. Hopefully that will come within the year. We'll find out. We're going to do a lot of drag performances, a lot of like queer-centered events outside of cycling. So there's a bunch of like community-based mutual aid things. I think the thing that I'm most excited about is that I get to offer community to people and a space to just kind of feel safe and accepted regardless of whether or not you're queer or on a bike or any of those things. It's really just a space that like people can come and have comfort instead of trying to kind of do performing around whatever part of the community that they're in.
That was Aaron Detroit Vesey right here in Los Angeles. You know, we cannot do this series without you, for real. So please go to marketplace.org/myeconomy and let us know what is going on with you. This final note on the way out today, which seems to be branding gone horribly wrong. Oscar Mayer, the luncheon meats people, have a partnership with a South Korean beauty company to make facial masks, the rejuvenating kind, not the COVID kind. And these masks, apparently they look like slices of bologna, the sandwich kind. Not edible, though, they make sure to point out. Our bologna has a nickname, says the description for this product on Amazon, and it's B-E-A-U-T-Y. I myself am going to stick with the original jingle, which I will not sing here. You're welcome. All right, we're done, but here is your moment of economic context, the relevant, for our purposes, passage from President Biden's press conference today. Asked about inflation and what he is going to do about it, President Biden said correctly, and this is a quote, "The critical job of making sure that elevated prices don't become entrenched rests with the Federal Reserve." The subtext here is that Jay Powell and the gang are clearly not going to get any pushback from the White House as they take the punch bowl away. Our media production team includes Brian Allison, Drew Jostad, Gary O'Keefe, Jeff Peters, Charlton Thorpe, Juan Carlos Torrado, and Becca Weinman. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.